This has long been a famous and favorite verse. It's a beautiful symphonic introduction to Srimad Bhagavatam. And there's a lot of information packed in there. Now, and that's spelled out in a purport. And one feature of this class will be the synoptic purports. That is to say, I'm going to hand out two versions of Srila Prabhupada's purport to this text, and two translations. The first one was done in the by Prabhupada, published by him in the Indian League of Devotees edition of 1962. These are the original, the first volume of the original three volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam that Prabhupada brought to America. This later was edited by his American devotees and published again in 1972, the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust edition. Now, the reason I've got two purports here, both of them, well, there's a couple of reasons. The main reason is that the editors who did this work in the early 70s made some mistakes. They were not at that point very familiar with Krishna conscious philosophy. They did not understand some of the things Prabhupada was writing about, and they made some errors in editing, left some things out that should have been in there. They're not vital. They're not something that's going to lead you astray. I'm not upset about it. It's understandable. On the other hand, if you want to read the very closely in the Srila Prabhupada, and when you open this book up, you notice right away there are just things that don't make sense. It's good to know that it's not Prabhupada's fault. The original Bhagavatam that Prabhupada wrote was written in a dialect of English, sometimes called Babu English. It's the Indian dialect of English. It's English as it is spoken in India among Indians. It's different English than, you know, standard English spoken at boardrooms of IBM and people like that. So it was re-edited into standard English by the editors, which is what you have to do to make it acceptable. But it also, in its original dialect, has its own force and charm, which is missing from the edited version. And that's the other reason why it's nice to read the original version. It's got some things that are very nice to read. Now, the other thing that I have in this double purport is also the introduction to Srimad Bhagavatam, which is also, in part, mostly, also a purport to the first verse. He explains various things in that first verse in the introduction to Srimad Bhagavatam, then moves into a presentation of the life of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then continues with the purport, so to speak, or does another purport when he gets to the verse itself. So that also is in this introduction. And the introduction begins with this very interesting statement, which we will try to understand very clearly. The interesting statement is, he says, the conception of God and the conception of absolute truth are not on the same level. Makes a distinction between the two, and says that Srimad Bhagavatam is aimed at the absolute truth. That is Prabhupada's translation, absolute truth, for the words that occur in that first verse, param satyam, or satyam param, in here. So we're going to trying to understand this philosophical notion of absolute truth. Prabhupada uses absolute truth. He uses the Latin phrase summum bonum, S-U-M-M-U-M B-O-N-U-M, summum bonum, which means literally highest good. And Sanskrit param satyam. So we're going to try to understand this philosophical idea, which is necessary to communicate to people when preaching about Krishna. Because if you just say to people Krishna is God, who knows what they think by what you mean by that word God. The definitions of that word are all over the map. Prabhupada uses a very precise term coined by himself, Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we want to look at that and see just precisely what that phrase means. And when we say Krishna is God, we really mean to say Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead. Godhead is another synonym for absolute truth. In English, there's God and there's the term Godhead, which means absolute truth. And we're going to just try to understand the difference in the idea or the conception. And then we'll be able to explain to people, when we talk about Krishna, exactly what we mean. This first verse explains the absolute truth. I don't have the photocopies of the text with me. I don't know how many of you have books. How many people here have Bhagavatam's 101 with me? I remember. Maybe we can. One thing we will do in this course is memorize this verse. How many people already have this verse memorized? Can I see a show of hands? Some, maybe, yes. Not so many, actually. Okay, well, we'll memorize this verse. It's not so hard. By the time you finish this course, you will have heard it so many times, it will be almost effortless. And then what I'll also give you, when we get the verse, is a breakdown of the verse into 9 components, each of which explains the feature of the absolute truth, so that you'll be able to understand it part by part, section by section, in the Sanskrit, and then we'll look at each of these parts as they're explained in the purport, and then when we're finished, you'll understand who Krishna is. And if you really understand who Krishna is, you'll have to understand that he really exists and that you have to surrender to him. That's the advantage of understanding all that. So if I can pass these around, I hope there will be enough for everybody. Because I would like you to start reading this. You can just read the BBT purport, the BBT purport, and just look over the other side. You can do any way you want. But when I start to explain things, at a certain point, I'm going to want to go over and refer to the older or original purport. Most of the time, it doesn't really make much difference. But in a few places, it does. And so... that's why I've done it like that. So I'll want to refer to it. Any questions so far? Okay. This is a facsimile edition of the original. They're still around, the originals. Getting old, but... And we have, now, for those of you who have books, we can open up to this this place here. Now, what page is it? Number 43 in this chapter 1, questions by the Savior's text one, mental one. I just want to go over the elements in this with you. The first element here is the Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavatam begins with that mantra, which has an independent existence of its own. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And the first part of Prabhupada's purport is about this mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, and why it is quoted here in Srimad Bhagavatam. The second element, Janmadhyasya Yataha. Now, let me read the whole thing through once. Those of you who have books can follow it. Huh? Janmadhyasya Yatom Vayat Itaratas Charate Svapityan Swara Tene Brahma Ridaya Adipavaye Noyan Tiyat Surayaha Tejovari Midam Yatha Vinimayo Yatra Trisar Gomrisha Tamna Svena Sada Nirasa Kuhakam Satyam Param Dhimahi. That's the whole thing. Not very hard, really. So it begins, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. In the first section, Janmadhyasya Yataha. Does anybody recognize that? Janmadhyasya Yataha. Yeah, that's a quotation. That's the second sutra of Vedanta Sutra. So it begins with a quotation. And it ends with a quotation, Dhimahi, which is from the Gayatri Mantra. It's an invocation of the Gayatri Mantra. All these things are significant. So we'll look at this. Another thing we do. First section, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We'll talk about the meaning of this word Vasudevaya, what Prabhupada says about that. Then the next thing we'll study is this Janma Adi Asya Yataha, which in the second sutra, second mantra of Vedanta Sutra, is a definition of Brahman. Vedanta Sutra begins by Vyasadeva saying, Atato Brahma Jignasa. Now, therefore, one should inquire into Brahman. And then he says, he defines Brahman, Janmadasi Yataha, that from which everything, Brahman is that from which everything has its origin, its sustenance, and its dissolution. That's the definition of what Brahman is, or absolute truth. Or as Prabhupada puts it, the ultimate source of all energies. So here it's put right in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam. And because of that, we understand that actually the Srimad Bhagavatam is the author's own commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. That's how it's taken. Vedanta Sutra. Sutra are very terse, pithy, little, compressed sayings. So to speak. They call them codes. And the Vedanta philosophy, which has the concluding highest Vedic knowledge, is codified in this work by Vyasadeva called the Vedanta Sutra. Why is it? You can't understand the Vedanta Sutra without a commentary. It's so compressed. It's almost unintelligible by itself. And in fact, every school of Vedanta presents its philosophy in the form of a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. And what the Vedanta Sutra does is really go through or deal with different verses in the Upanishads about the Absolute Truth and organize it around sambandha, abhigeya, and prayojana, forming relationship with the Absolute Truth, acting in that relationship, and attaining the highest goal. And settling disputes and defeating Buddhist philosophy, atheistic Sankhya philosophy, Karma Mimamsa philosophy, various other schools of Vedic that are not don't come all the way to the end. Vedanta means the end of knowledge. So it's summarized in this little code that nobody can understand. But because it's so terse and so compact, it's also possible to memorize and keep the whole structure in your head. You have to remember that Vedic culture was carried on without a great reliance on word processors or as little as possible on writing. Nowadays, when a scholar has to move, he has to have a moving van and carry all his books, you know. Prabhupada had one disciple named, called him Panditji, who had a big collection of books, and everywhere he went with Prabhupada, he had these big trunks he had to worry about. Prabhupada made some jokes at his expense, like a donkey carrying his bags, you know, with all these books. So, what did the exemplary Vedantic scholar, the Vedic person, was renounced? Didn't have a whole lot of property. Didn't have moving vans. You know, had a water pot and a dunda maybe, and that was it. So where was everything? It was all in his head. So, to be simple, a great store was put on being able to remember things. And things were not reduced to writing until the beginning of Kali Yuga, when finally Vyasadeva put everything in writing because people's memories were getting so rotten. So the original transmission of Vedic knowledge was all through memory. And writing is a crutch. Plato complains actually about writing too. He says because everybody's writing more and more, he says nobody can remember anything. So there's other confirming evidence that actually this is the case. So in Kali Yuga, everyone's memory gets so bad that they have to take notes and write things down and lug books everywhere. We have to access libraries through all this stuff. So, of course, you may think we're more advanced because we have all this information retrieval high tech, but if everybody just had really good memories, as Vedic scholars did, and certain practices that improve your memory and keep it fine, like brahmachari and things like that, then you know, you might understand that that's actually more advanced. So, for the purposes of retaining the whole structure of Vedantic philosophy in your mind, it was reduced to these codes. The same way, for example, Sanskrit grammar. The Panini system of Sanskrit grammar, there's a series of rules. There's maybe between 4,000 and 5,000 rules. And again, they're squeezed. I mean, they are compressed. They sound like gibberish, almost. And you start a kid in the Gurukula at the age of 5. And you think they chant. They chant the rules of grammar. Because, you know, little kids, they have minds like sponges. They can absorb everything. Even if they can't understand anything, whatever they hear, they remember. And unfortunately, they're hearing, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and everything. But it used to be they go in the Gurukula, And all the little boys
would just chant and chant and chant
those Sanskrit grammar rules. And then, you know, after a few years, they had all the rules in their head. 5,000 rules of Sanskrit grammar. The whole thing, all in their head, indelibly. Because I've heard tapes where, you know, Western scholars have gone to India and found old men in their 60s who could chant them all. Because they learned them like this. It never goes away. So then you learn all the rules like that. They're all in your head. And then, you know, when you're 11 or 12 years old, you start to learn how to apply it. And that way you have the whole thing is all up here. That's how it was done. So the Sanskrit grammar is also in codes like that, these very compressed codes. So this one here that this begins with, I assume it's that me. What an M? Okay.
J A N Jan. Janma, right? Adi, Pasya, Yataha. Janmat, you put this together. This A becomes long. Janmat, this becomes a Y. Janmat, Yasya, Yataha.
I put it like this because I want to look at the elements. Huh? This is how it begins.
Janma means birth, literally, right? Janma karma janika, birth. Adi means etc. Asya means of this. Yataha means from which. See, it's really packed in. So look what it says. It says it's really tight, huh? Birth, etc. Of this, from which.
So you gotta unpack it. See, it's done this way, so you say, from which, because the previous one said, ended with Brahman. Atato Brahma Jignasa. Now, therefore, inquiry into Brahman. So, this which refers to Brahman. Brahman is that from which the birth, etc. of this creation proceeds. So you have to supply the missing elements. So janma, birth, three things. Creation, maintenance, and destruction. So Brahman is that from which the birth, creation, maintenance, and destruction of this cosmos proceeds. So it's all packed up into this little phrase here. So in putting this at the beginning of this verse, Vyasadeva is invoking the whole Vedanta Sutra. And because of this, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepts the Srimad Bhagavatam as Vyasadeva's own personal commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. Here he explains what he means by the Absolute Truth. Vyasadeva wrote the Vedanta Sutra. This is his own commentary. And therefore, for a long time, the followers of Lord Chaitanya, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, did not have their own commentary. Generally, all the Vaishnava schools, all the schools of Vedanta have a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Shankaracharya, the impersonalist, has a commentary. Anybody remember the name of that commentary?
Sharirat Bhashya.
He has a commentary. Then the Vaishnava Acharyas, Ramanuja has a Sri Bhashya. So the different schools have their commentary. Bhashya means a commentary. But the Gaudiya Vaishnavas did not, because they considered Srimad Bhagavatam as the author's own commentary. Then finally, we got one. Baladeva Vidyabhushana produced a commentary, because, to make a long story short, we were not getting recognized as an authentic school because we had no commentary, so it was necessary to produce a commentary for our credentials. So Baladeva Vidyabhushana in the 18th century wrote a commentary called Govinda Bhashya. But we always think that really the real first and foremost commentary is this Srimad Bhagavatam. So it begins this way: Janmadasya, 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 Yataha. That's the beginning definition here of the absolute truth. Any questions about this business here? So anyway, we'll get into that more later. So here you see the first part, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, O my Lord Sri Krishna, son of Vasudev, O all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. That's the first section. I meditate upon Lord Sri Krishna because he is the absolute truth and the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance, and destruction of the manifested universes. That's Janmadasya Yataha. That's how Prabhupada translates it there. That second part. Then he goes on. The third part, he says, Anvayat itaraha cha arteshu abhigyan. He's directly and indirectly conscious of everything that happens within the whole creation. And we'll learn what it means, this directly conscious and indirectly conscious. Then, Svarat. He's independent. This is another characteristic of the absolute truth. Then the fifth characteristic that's given in this verse, Tele Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavaye, that he is the one that inspired and enlightened the creator Brahma and imparted Vedic knowledge into the heart of the first wise person, Adi Kavi Brahma. Then it goes on. Muyanti yat surayaha tejovari mridam yata dinimayaha. That he is the source of the deluding potency, which deludes even the sages and the demigods. And so they become bewildered, as one is bewildered by a mirage, and so on. Then yatta tri saragam risha, and at the same time, he is the source of the appearance of the reality in the deluding potency. Because of him, the world appears real, even though it's not. Then dāmna svena sadā narasta kuhakam. Then that he exists in his own internal potency. So there's a distinction in this verse between the external potency and the internal potency. It's a very important thing here. He distinguishes the two. Dhamna svena sada narasta kuhakam. And he lives in his own abode eternally, self-sufficiently, and beyond all touches of the deluding potency. Satyam Param Dhimahi. I meditate upon that one who is the Satyam Param, the supreme truth, the summum bonum, or the absolute truth. So those are the elements here of this particular verse. And we'll go through and just discuss various parts of the purport as they apply to each one of these topics. And what I wanted to do was to start going over the verse in Sanskrit, but I don't know if we can. Everybody has everyone has the texts. How many texts do we have?
I don't know.
We have enough that people can share and look on with each other? Yeah, we'll have to do it tomorrow, I think.
Some has been noted, not that we can follow.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, because I ran out of things to say today. Enlivened and enlightened. Let me start then with one more thing. This is an interesting any more of these? What happened to the rest of these? Here they are. I think I can take care of this in the remainder of time today. It's an interesting point. Let's look at this on page 5 here. This is an example. It starts out with a mistake by the editors, which confused me for some time until I went back to the original and saw what happened. Prabhupada begins his purport by saying, obeisances into the personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, I'm reading the BBT edition now, Vasudeva directly indicates Lord Sri Krishna, who is the divine son of Vasudeva and Devaki. So what Prabhupada is doing here is he's looking at Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Now that word is with a long A. Vasudeva is the name of Krishna's father. And there's a rule of Sanskrit grammar by which you elongate or strengthen the first vowel, and it becomes a person's it's a patronymic. You know, like Johnson, son of John, Peterson, son of Peter. Those are called patronymic. The same with the Mick, the Scottish Mick. That's also a patronymic. It used to be standard all over the world. Ben and Semitic languages, also the son of so-and-so. So that was a fashion to name people after their fathers, patronymic, or there's also matronymics. We use them in son of Kunti, Kaunteya, is a matronymic. By the same rules, means both. Well, here's, we have a prayer we say, right? We always say it wrong, too. Namaste, Saraswat, K, there's an E, Deve. This is, does not refer to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, but to the son of
or offspring of.
This is actually, it has an E on the end because it's a marketed case ending. I'm offering my obeisances to Saraswata. The word is S-A-R-A. The actual word is Saraswata. It's derived from Saraswati. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. But this word is Sara with a long A, Saraswata, which means Prabhupada, the disciple of, offspring of, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So everybody says, Namaste Saraswati. it's actually supposed to be Saraswati because it's Prabhupada's patronymic, his spiritual patronymic. So this is Krishna's patronymic. He is the son of Vasudeva. So he's known as Vasudeva. Now, this is controversial. That's why Prabhupada takes some time to point this out, because you may be aware of, those of you that do deity worship, that Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya is the Mula Mantra for Narayan. Matter of fact, like if you offering doing RT to Lord Balaram, you say Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. It's to Narayan, not to Krishna. Krishna is Krishnaya Namaha, then you offer Balaram, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So that is a Narayan mantra, not a Krishna mantra, a Narayan mantra. So what Prabhupada wants to establish here is that in this case, in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, the real meaning is of Om Namo Vasudeva Vasudevaya. It's not Vasudeva, who is one of the Narayan forms, also has this name, Vasudeva with the long A, but this one it refers particularly to Lord Sri Krishna, who is the son of Vasudeva. So that's why he says here, directly indicate obeisances to Vasudev, directly indicate not four-handed Vasudev Narayan, but Lord Sri Krishna, the divine son of Vasudev and Devaki. Then he says something. Then we see that the editors make a mistake. The BBT edition says, this fact will be more explicitly explained in the text of this work. Sri Vyasadeva asserts herein that Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and all others are his direct or indirect plenary portions or portions of the portion. Now, I read that sentence, I says, where does Vyasadeva assert herein? You know, I look back at the verse, and I don't see anywhere in that verse that Vyasadeva asserts herein that Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and all others are his direct or indirect plenary portions. Now let's go look at the other side, huh? Obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, directly indicate Lord Sri Krishna, who is the divine son of Vasudeva and Devaki, saying, this fact will be more explicitly explained later in the text of Srimad Bhagavatam. he says, later in the text of Srimad Bhagavatam, by the direct statement of the author, that is to say, Vyasadeva, in his assertion that Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead and all others are either his direct or indirect plenary portions or portions of the portions. Who knows that verse? Ete chamsa kalapum sam krishnas tu bhagavans. Wow. That's what Prabhupada is referring to. That verse where a little later on, directly, Vyasadeva says, He's enumerated all the different incarnations that appear. And he says, Ete cha amsa ka, and all these, the incarnations that we just discussed about, they are kalas or amshas, expansions or expansions of expansions, but Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. But Krishna is Bhagavan Swayam. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself. That's a crucial verse.
and Srimad Bhagavatam. We know that now.
In 1970, the editors who were doing Prabhupada's books did not know that he was referring to this text.
They didn't know Bhagavatam that well.
So, but I would suggest, of course, that the BBT redo this, but you're liable to get in a lot of trouble because when there were mistakes like this in the original Bhagavad Gita, it was fixed up a little bit and people start to say, you changed Prabhupada. You know? What you did is bring it back to the original. But that's why I have both texts here. This is the worst mistake here, because it can really lead you to figure out where is this asserted herein that Krishna is the original personality of God. It's not there. It's asserted a little later on. I don't know the number for that text. Ete chamsa kalapum sam Krishna stu bhagavan swayam. It's in the first canto.
Third chapter or something. Let me find out just a second. I'll let you know if you're taking notes down. Canto 1, 328. Chapter 3, text number 28. Ete chamsa kalapum sam.
But that's what you need. You just need a little parentheses and that reference put down so everybody will know where it is. Then he says, as Srila Jiva Goswami has even more explicitly explained the subject matter in his Krishna Sandarbha. In the Krishna Sandarbha, he goes into it further, how Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. In fact, Jiva Goswami gives a very long discussion of Ete Chamsa Kalapumsam Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam, and argues that statement is a Mahavakya. That's like a crucial, central, pivotal statement in Srimad Bhagavatam that, in the light of which all of the statements have to be understood. So he gives the thing here. And Brahma, the original living being, has explained the subject of Sri Krishna substantially in his treatise named Brahma Samhita. And then he says, in the Samaveda Upanishad, it is also stated that Lord Sri Krishna is divine son of Devaki. Therefore, in this prayer, the first proposition holds that Lord Sri Krishna is the primeval Lord. And that if any transcendental nomenclature is to be understood as belonging to the absolute personality of Godhead, it must be the name indicated by the word Krishna, which means all attractive. So all that is just commentating on this word, Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. That we're indicating directly here with Sri Krishna. Now there's an interesting little thing here later on where there's obviously some text dropped out of the original. He quotes a number of other sources which talk about the name of Krishna. And then I'm on the League of Devotee edition, it says, and he says, it is said that out of innumerable names of the Lord, the name of Krishna is the principal name. Then there's an argument here, and it looks like there was a typo in the original. There were some lines were dropped out. Therefore, although Vasudeva indicates the plenary portion of the personality of Godhead, and then there was something dropped out, all the different forms of the Lord being identical with Vasudeva, indicated in this text, is principally meant to indicate the divine son of Vasudeva and Devaki, Sri Krishna, who is always meditated upon. In other words, there's something missing in this sense, because what there is an argument which says that although, in fact, Vasudeva indicates a plenary portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and somehow or other, all the different forms of the Lord are identical with each other, still the name Vasudeva in this text is principally indicate the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. So I would suggest that the printer dropped a few lines there, because it doesn't help you when it says the BBT edition. It says, Vasudeva vindicates the plenary portion of the personality of Godhead, and all the different forms of the Lord being identical with Vasudeva are indicated in this text. They don't have the argument either. But something's dropped, something's lost.
They went from Vasudeva to Vasudeva.
Yeah, something's lost here. I don't know exactly what the argument, but Prabhupada wanted to have an argument taking into account that although Vasudeva does indicate a plenary portion of Krishna, one of the expansions, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, Shankarshan, Vasudeva, one of the four quadrantal expansions, here in this text, it indicates the son of Devaki and Vasudeva. So I bet it could be recovered if you looked at the purports that Prabhupada was using, and it could be found what the argument that Prabhupada was. Because usually Prabhupada got his arguments from the acharyas, so that needs to be a little research there. So anyway, that's about the nomenclature of the absolute, part one there. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Why that is Krishna indicated in this verse. Well, questions about that? Anything else? Any other discussion?
Could you go back for the three sections of the Vedanta?
Three sections?
Didn't you say it was three?
Oh, yeah. It's the Vedanta Sutra compromises three topics, according to Lord Chaitanya. Sambandha Gyan, Abhideya Gyan. I don't know if I can spell these.
I can try.
And Prayojana.
These are supposed to be
DA or
DAH?
Aspirates. Sambandha?
No.
Huh?
Yeah, it was AH. Sambandha.
Oh,
yeah.
Sambandha.
Yes,
that. DAH.
As it is. EY.
Oh, A Y A
H B
G
I
E
Y
E Y A Abhideya. Oh yeah, A Abhideya. And Prayojana. I think that's right.
Yeah.
These are the three divisions. So Sambandha means. Establishing. Relationship with the absolute truth. That's what Sambandha is about. Understanding what the absolute truth is and what your relationship is with the absolute truth.
Is the picture there?
The Sambandha, yeah, okay.
This could be the A B H. It is moving into the H A B H.
H here?
Yeah.
H. No H here?
No. It is there.
Abhideya, okay. Abhideya.
This is.
Huh?
This is Abhideya.
There is an H.
Yes. The book is an
H. You guys can look it up later. Abhideya refers to acting within that relationship. Understanding the relationship and then acting upon that relationship. So that involves the process for going back to Godhead, your sadhana, your spiritual practices, what's the correct way to go about it. That's recognized in Abhideya. And Prayojana means the description of the ultimate goal, going back to Godhead. So these are the three topics that are dealt with in this order
in the Vedanta Sutra. That's what it's about.
There's four
main sections of the Vedanta Sutra. I don't recall, but as my memory is, it may be faulty, so I don't want to say anything. There's four main sections of the Vedanta Sutra, as I recall, the first deals with Sambandha, the middle two deal with Abhideya, and the last deals with Prayojana. Yeah?
Can you explain that phrase, summum bonum?
Summum bonum. Yeah, we're going to talk about that more next time. But this has to do with this notion of what we mean when we say the absolute truth. Huh? This is a Latin. So bonum means good, and summum means the highest good. Except Satyam has the additional notion of not only goodness but reality too. So it's almost a direct translation, but this appears in philosophical literature, classical literature, when it comes to speculating on what is the absolute truth. The word absolute truth that Prabhupada uses came into vogue. That phrase came into vogue in the 19th century in Europe. That also has a history. It's relatively late. And it's mostly the word absolute gets associated with German idealistic philosophy, especially that of G.W.F. Hegel, the absolute. It shows up also, let's see, another phrase, Latin phrase, is ens realissimus, the most real being. It's another one that shows up. And we have this other phrase that if you look in literature, this notion, this word Godhead. Where I first ran into the word Godhead was in connection with certain mystics, especially actually, Meister Eckhart, a German mystic of 15th century maybe, I forgot, somewhere around there. Late medieval German mystic, Meister Eckhart, and always in trouble with the church. And he seemed to have a great deal of Mayavada philosophy, in some moods anyway, in his philosophy. So he talked about such things as God beyond God. And he made a distinction between God and the Godhead. And whereas God was the personal feature, there was something beyond personality, which was the source of God, which was the Godhead with which you merged after you finished worshiping God. But Godhead is there in the literature as referring to the absolute truth. As we'll learn tomorrow, Prabhupada, when he makes a distinction between these two concepts, he says Srimad Bhagavatam is about the absolute truth.
it, that's what it's targeted on, discussing the absolute truth, different from the idea of God. The idea of God has to be a person. The idea of God includes the idea of person. It's self-contradictory to say there's a God and that God is not a person. Just, it's incoherent. It's like saying there's a bachelor but he's married. You know, it's gibberish, you know. So God, it means, has to be a person. But it doesn't have anything to do with how many there are of them. There can be tons of those gods. There's a film everybody sees in the high schools and in colleges on Hinduism called 33 Million Gods or something. I've never heard it, but they see it. Now, absolute truth, there can, by definition, can be only one. By definition, absolute truth, sunam bonum, Godhead, param satyam, there's only one. But it's not clear in the definition whether personal or impersonal. That's what Prabhupada says. So we'll discuss that tomorrow. And then when you get all clear about that, one thing we have to understand, final word. Prabhupada says, anyone who can say with complete conviction, Krishna, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Brahman, is liberated at once. Now, part of what it takes to say that with conviction is to understand what it is. This means that when you say, Krishna, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Brahman, you have to understand what that means. When you understand what that means, then you can, there's some other way towards saying it with conviction. The other thing is, one is to understand it, and the other thing is to agree to it. But you can't agree to it until you understand it. So that's what we're going to try to understand, what it means to say that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay? So until tomorrow, thank you very much.